you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome to the show. My name is Nate Sapaya. I am the Managing Director of the Emerging Market Investor Association, and I will be substituting for Tay Revez today and next week, so you're stuck with me for 2 weeks. It's my pleasure today to introduce our guest is Olutoyin Oyelade, who is the Managing Partner of INVCAP, which is provides accredited investors with access to opportunities in the frontier markets of Africa. I had a chance to speak with Ms. Oyelade a few weeks ago for an interview and found her a wealth of information about Africa and specifically for our topic today on Nigeria. So, Ms. Oyelade, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nate, for having me.
Just want to give us a brief introduction of your firm. We'll start with that, and then we'll launch into questions about Nigerian investment.
Yeah, great. INVCAP itself is an investment manager. We provide accredited investors access to investment opportunities in the frontier markets of Africa. And we operate from Africa. Specifically, we're based in Abuja and southwestern Nigeria. We have project offices in Ibadan and Adoekiti because those are the areas where we focus our investments on. Of course, as you know, the frontier market does not present a huge opportunity. 17 to 20 fastest the countries in the world, growing economies in the world are represented by the frontier markets. And after a thorough market research, INVCAP decided after garnering huge experiences from the financial sector and real estate markets in West Africa, we decided to set up INVCAP and focus in Nigeria. Now INVCAP itself has several projects that it has executed and funded in West Africa, and specifically Nigeria. About 32 commercial real estate projects have been delivered to various investors in the private and the public sectors of the economy. INVCAP also has a major strategy to go into the hospitality and tourism sectors in these countries, particularly in Ghana and Nigeria. And some of those projects that we have already started on, working on, will be delivered in the first quarter of next year. I guess at this point we'll pause and take some of those questions, and then we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you for the introduction. So obviously, you know, before we get into the nitty-gritty of doing business investing in Nigeria, you know, something that's obviously been trending in mass media and on everyone's mind in terms of both investment and business and just generally is the, you know, potential pandemic of Ebola, which is, you know, spread from Africa has gone is somewhat internationally. But, you know, as a huge negative, I kind of, and we've discussed that there's actually a positive to how Nigeria has been handling the situation. How has the Nigerian government been dealing with the Ebola situation, and where is it now?
Well, I'm certainly not your expert on Ebola, the Ebola disease. However, from news reports we hear that the disease itself, the epidemic, has been contained in Nigeria. In fact, sometime this week, earlier on this week, the country director of the World Health Organization in Nigeria announced that Nigeria has defeated the Ebola disease. And that obviously was as a result of the fact that no new cases have been reported in the last 42 days. And about 13 cases earlier reported had already been discharged and declared free, you know, after some monitoring and measures that were taken. The government itself, talking about the government of Nigeria, initially there were about 13 reports of Ebola reported in Nigeria. There were 13 cases, and the government immediately appeared to have swung into action. I mean, of course, a lot of us were surprised by the government's reaction, but then obviously this was viewed seriously, and some funding, maybe about $14 million, I understand, was devoted to that cause to address and contain the disease. And that's why you have the kind of results that you have today. With the announcement of the country director of the WHO made yesterday, that kind of puts to rest the problem of Ebola in Nigeria. The disease has been contained from what we hear. However, of course, citizens are meant to remain vigilant. Screening centers remain very active and open. And there are specific centers dedicated and already, put in place for any situation to be reported, just in case such situations arise in the near future. But it's been a success story, particularly with the credence lent to announcements earlier made by the Nigerian government itself that he had contained the disease. The WHO coming up again yesterday to announce that the Nigeria had defeated the disease lent some credence to that report.
What do you think about Nigeria specifically allowed it to make such good progress compared to other regions heavily hit? If we look at Sierra Leone or Liberia, what was it, Nigerian infrastructure? How did they take care of it so efficiently?
Nigeria understands that it has a lot at stake, particularly in these times. Not only has Nigeria been in the news for so many reasons, a lot of investment traffic. Nigeria itself has witnessed a lot of investment traffic in recent times. I'm sure Nigeria understands that the Ebola crisis, not well managed at this time, will pose serious implications for investment opportunities in the country, as it stands. One of the reasons that Nigeria possibly might have swung into action so speedily on Ebola because of some of the other issues for which it has been criticized in recent times, other crises that possibly people felt were not so quickly managed. And they wanted to prove to the international community that he has the capacity to manage a crisis of this nature. And the Minister of Health itself, immediately, the news was heard, Ebola news came on about, a few weeks ago. The Minister of Health itself had announced that Nigeria was not going to close its border, but rather would actually put screening centers immediately at all airports and all border points. So that was actually a major step taken to prevent the rapid spread of the disease. And I think one of the major reasons for Nigeria is because, like we said, infrastructure, investment becomes very critical to be managed at times like this. Yeah.
Okay. And, in one way, you could say that, Ebola increases the perceived risk in Africa or Nigeria, Western Africa. But in the other sense, how do you think investors feel about seeing Nigeria so efficiently deal with this problem? Do you think that is going to help investor perception of the region and of Nigeria itself?
Absolutely. And that's, if Nigeria has shown such capacity to manage a crisis of this nature, or even in some other developed nations, you've had cases of Ebola still being managed, but Nigeria right there has actually contained it. That shows some capacity to manage crisis. And aside that capacity being shown to the world as we speak, it tells a good story about infrastructure being in place, health infrastructure, screening centers, the tools in place to deal with crises as they arise, as they occur. He also tells you that Nigeria could also be proactive in managing, in managing situations as they arise, and being proactive even to take note of the early warning signals to address issues even before they occur. And of course, that could, what we believe is that the winning strategies that have been adopted to contain the crisis of Ebola will be replicated in other sectors that require some attention at this particular time, which is actually one of the major strategies of the government of the day in Nigeria. Applying that to infrastructure development, applying that to other areas of security issues, regulatory framework, putting all the necessary framework in place to encourage investment, to encourage infrastructure development, and even the direct flow of capital into the country. Some of these winning strategies that we've seen in recent times have been replicated across the sectors, and we believe that it would encourage investors to begin to focus on Nigeria as a country.
Sure. Do you believe Nigeria can serve as a model or a template for, for Ghana or for other countries in the region to deal with their own Ebola problems?
Now, when you talk about regional, I think for Ghana, the story is quite different, because for Ghana, looking at Ghana as an example, there have actually been no reported cases of Ebola in Ghana. And Ghana has actually, the government itself took preventive steps to secure its citizens and its own border, you know, when the news of Ebola came out at first, and setting of screening centers and isolation centers and things like that. Those were steps that Ghana took. Now, talking about Ghana, in fact, the UN mission for the Ebola emergency response is also located in Accra, which is the capital of Ghana. And most of the Western, you know, West African region, citizens from the Western African region have actually, you know, most of them have actually had to take some you know, shelter in Ghana, in Accra specifically. I think Nigeria, from some of the proactive steps it has taken and the preventive measures at this time, would serve as an example to all the smaller African countries like the Sierra Leone, the Liberia, and, you know, the Guinea, you know, all the other smaller countries where the disease itself actually came, well, came from. I think they will take a cue from those countries with a view to learning some of the winning strategies that have been adopted by these other two countries, Ghana and Nigeria specifically.
Okay, interesting. That's a different spin on the whole Ebola problem as kind of a positive in dealing with it as opposed to a negative.
Mm-hmm.
So moving you know, on to Nigeria specifically in terms of investment and business, you know, there's been a lot of coverage of Nigeria in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years as, you know, as a positive, as a forward-moving country in Africa, and there's been a lot of attention given to it. In some cases, we find that attention given to emerging market countries can create, you know, overpricing of assets, can create a bubble, can have negative effects. How has the publicity been for Nigeria? Where is Nigeria today in terms of doing business and investment?
Well, I mean, the media story and the reports that you get from Nigeria has been twofold. You know, you have the one that is very positive and would actually elicit the interest of discerning investors. And then you have the other one that is actually negative also. I mean, as you well know, each country has its own fair share of positive and positive and negative stories. However, for Nigeria, the case with Nigeria is that the positive reports have actually provided sufficient traction for investors to begin to review the opportunities in Nigeria. One, because before now, the news generally about Africa has always been about its wars, its epidemics, and,
right,
you know. But Nigeria itself proves a different, you know, it proves a different story completely, because having started out, you know, with managing crises over time, it has actually been able to prove itself and differentiate itself. And by that, I mean that if you look around the early 2000s, Nigeria's commercial relationships had actually been very low. When you look at the U.S. as a trading partner, you look at the U.K., very low balances, account balances and balances of trade. However, from the 2003, 2004, I think, The commercial relationship between Nigeria and the United States as a trading partner went as high, you know, I think there was about a 19% increase from about 11 billion to 30 billion. In Canada, in the European Union, you look at all the trade volumes, I'm sure in excess of about 24 billion. In China, about 13.8 billion thereabouts, rising from about 3.3 billion. So on all fronts, with all those countries, you had an inflow and an increase of about 50%, and obviously that was just not on account of the news media reports. It was also because a lot had changed in terms of the economic fundamentals of the country. Nigeria had already taken some steps to begin aggressively to privatize most of its institutions. As you might be aware, about 80% of the economy of Africa, most economies in Africa, are public sector driven. And that's because government itself has all kinds of institutions in the oil sector, mineral resources and coal, and all managed by the government and its agencies. However, around about the 2003-2004, Nigeria took some of the steps to privatize some of these institutions, and so it opened up its windows and allowed some of these companies to come into the country in the oil sector, in the energy sector, in real estate, across major sectors of the economy. And they started the Privatization Act. And that was followed through completely. And obviously, a lot of countries in West African and East African region had already taken a cue from some of the initiatives commenced by Nigeria at that time. And the result is what we begin to see today.
We have to go to a commercial break. We will be back in a few minutes, continuing with Ms. Oluyaye, talking about the Nigerian development of its economy. We'll be back shortly.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. My name is Nate Sapaya. I'm guest hosting for Tay Revez. It is our pleasure to have Ms. Olutoyin Oyelade, the managing partner of INCAP today, and we're discussing Nigerian business investment. We were just in the middle of discussing how Nigeria over the past 5 years or so has significantly increased trade with the EU, UK, China, U.S. due to privatization initiatives. So, Olu, please tell us more about how privatization has really driven the trade, which, I mean, I'm assuming that one of the consequences was that the Nigerian GDP has skyrocketed, is now, you know, between Sweden and Poland, you know, far surpassing South Africa. So how did the impetus to begin privatization start, and what have been the results of that?
Oh, well, obviously a lot of deficiencies in the market, capital, you know, the precarious liquidity position of the financial institutions in the country itself, the fact that there was no access to capital, and the small and medium enterprises were possibly non-existent at some point. You know, I mean, there were so few that you couldn't even count them, and the entire economy itself was driven by the public sector and all its institutions. Most of the workers within the country, like almost about 75%, civil servants. By civil servants, we mean federal workers, you know, the people who work for the state, municipal, right, or federal government. You know, so the private sector initiative itself was totally, it was very low, and obviously no economy can develop that way. I mean, as we were told, it has to be developing labor, land, capital, and entrepreneurs. It's the entrepreneurs that actually run and drive the engine of any nation. And so Nigeria obviously must have woken up and taken a look at what was going on and what the winning strategies of the developed economies were. And they obviously decided to adopt that. And so that was how the public sector reform started. It started with various acts initiated by the House and the legislative arm of the government.
Was there a significant political change at the time? Was there a regime change that began this? Or did the current regime decide that it needed to modernize and move forward? Yeah.
it wasn't the current regime. It had actually been, it was actually the initiatives that had been taken by the, you know, other previous regimes. So some were half, you know, some were only partially executed, and then some were taken up again by the, you know, current and subsequent subsequent leaders of the country. And they took a cue from this, and then the public and the private sector reform started, and it started majorly from the energy sector. The energy sector itself, you know, I mean, obviously because of the oil imports, and almost about 60% or 65% of Nigeria's revenues are derived from oil imports. And so they knew, he was very clear that that sector had to be reformed. And some of the reforming strategies that were taken was to invite, participants, very active operators from other countries to bid for various segments of those sectors. And some of those some of the licenses have already been granted, and people have, and they have actually settled down and started operationalizing some of the strategies that they presented before they won the licenses. And in the telecoms industry, the same was also done. You know, instead of relying completely on the state-owned telecoms corporation, Nigeria also privatized in that area. About 4 licenses were actually granted in 2003, I think. Well, 2003, with about 2 companies winning from South Africa alone, and an indigenous company. Yes, two companies from South Africa, and an indigenous company came from another one from Nigeria, an indigenous company. And since then, I mean, you find telecommunications will fast track the speed of business and facilitate business transactions and all of that. And so you found the cost. We found the cost of doing business in Nigeria going down on account of these reforms, and obviously some of the niche players that we had before out in developed nations also had to come in. Some of them started bidding, you know, for some of the licenses. And as you have it now, Nigeria itself is a place where you say the internet density used to be about, the telecommunications density used to be about 14%. But however, now, I mean, we've had some major increases, and the cost of telecommunications has largely reduced on account of the competition that you have in the country, the competition that you have in the country. And so some of the private sector reforms have brought some of these, some of the benefits that we see today. Aside from telecoms and energy sector, we also have in the consumer sector a lot of good news. The middle class is making things happen because you have a rising middle class, and you also have another class called the emerging middle class. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point if you have the time today, because that poses very huge opportunities for some of the investors that need to come into the country to partake of some of the benefits that we see there today.
That actually is the follow-up question. We've discussed that the privatization has kind of lowered the cost of business, increased the ability to do business, and increased trade on an international level. What is the, in most emerging markets, since 2008 and prior, this emerging market growth story, capitalizing on internal demand, growth of the middle class, and citizens of emerging markets wanting more consumer goods, financial services, so on and so forth. What is the consumer story within Nigeria, and is the demands of the consumer being met internally, or do we need to increase manufacturing in Nigeria for consumer goods, financial services, or is it mostly being imported these days? What is the consumer market like in Nigeria today?
Yeah, if you look at the Nigerian market, the consumer story in the Nigerian market, it's actually unfolded over the past few years, and the reason is because you've always had a middle class, however, almost insignificant, because it's just between the people at the higher rung of the ladder and then the very low class. And the middle class was almost non-existent. However, in the last few years, you can actually point and say you have a real middle class that has emerged within the Nigerian, within the country called Nigeria. And the middle class in Nigeria is even said to be the third largest contributor to the country's GDP right now at 16%. And it's actually expected to control the highest growth in the retail and consumer sectors within the African region in the next 5 years. The reason for that is, one, because of the population, which is currently put at about 174 million, the total population. Of course, some people say it's about 200, but we have the figure 174. And of that 174, that tells you that about one out of every African is a Nigerian, you know. And the middle class, what has emerged from that class is that they have an increasingly there's a purchasing power. One, because they earn more incomes now, and the incomes earned is obviously as a result of the privatization that we just talked about a few minutes ago. The privatization efforts of the government allowing a lot of an influx of mid to large ranged companies and multinationals into the country, and obviously they put jobs on the table, and so people had to do the work. And so now the middle class itself has kind of developed, you know, there are people who have developed new attitudes, new appetites. They may not be able to afford the real classy things, but then they want very good quality products too. Is Nigeria able to meet all the demands of the middle class? The answer is no. One, because Nigeria itself is an import-based economy. Most of the items are actually imported from offshore, so that's why we talked about the trade relations with China growing at a very rapid rate, because most of the businessmen actually go out to China to ship in items, and they trade with China. It's very active. And then there are many Chinese companies also in Nigeria doing business, manufacturing domestically and then also internationally. Nigeria imports a lot from its partners, but the manufacturing sector in Nigeria is very weak. And so that would present itself another huge opportunity for development and for investment, even for our investors. The needs of the middle class have not been met. There's a huge gap. I will give you an example quickly. One of the investors that brought the type of shopping mall, it's called a large mall in Nigeria by Nigerian standards, but that's what you would call a strip mall around here in North America. But it actually deemed to be a very large mall, and it was the first of its type brought into Nigeria by one of the private equity funds financed by them, and it was set up. With a duration of about 5 years, I understand. Within 2 years, the company had cashed out and was ready to move on, because it had actually reaped the full returns on its investment. And that's a function of the middle class, the activities of the middle class, the appetite of the middle class, the fact that people really want the good things of life. And so even if they are not able to afford, the highest quality or the brand names that we see out here in North America or that are available to you in other Southern African countries, they would at least go for a variant of it that is also equally qualitative, but might not be the exact same brand. You know, and so this also in itself presents another opportunity for consumer products and manufacturers of consumer products to actually take a stake and take a bet on the Nigerian economy and possibly site some of the factories in that country and maybe take a bet on investing in those sectors. The middle class also, I mean, we talk about food, we talk about, franchises, foods, and fast foods. As we speak, most of the prominent fast food chains, none of them actually is in Nigeria as we speak, except for KFC. So if you look at the opportunity, 174 million people, there must be 20%. There must be 20% of that population that can afford, to feed at the KFC, obviously. And in fact, it wouldn't be fast food, possibly. It wouldn't be fast food, actually. It might actually be some fine dining type of thing. And so you have the middle class. And because you have that potential emerging middle class again, put at another 18% of that economy. And so if you have a middle class put at about 20% and another 18% as emerging middle class, then, I mean, we're not even talking about the very, the people at the higher rung of the ladder. So then that tells you about the potential opportunities in consumer sector products, about the potential opportunities even in semi-luxury products, food and groceries and goods and services and various other things that can be done within that economy to generate income. You look at the hotel chains. It's common to see your regular Holiday Inn. I mean, I use that as a chain. I mean, as an example, the Holiday Inn chain, because you have a fair idea of how much it charges for per night.
Sure.
For a night stay. And so in North America, if you had to pay like an $80, I think it should be between an $80 to $100, for instance, for a night at a Holiday Inn, then in Nigeria, you would be looking at a $400 rate. And that's the way it is. And it's, you know, and that's an account of the population. So wow. That also presents in itself a huge opportunity for chains like, maybe Best Western, maybe Ibis of Europe, to come in. We have an Ibis, which I actually already sampled, and, the average rate would be a $200 per night. And wow. So you look at this, and then you think somebody can still come into that market and provide services at $100, for instance, which will still be sizable and which will still be revenue generating for the company that decides to do that investment. So these are huge opportunities that can be done, particularly when you have the population. Another thing, I think a major advantage of the middle class that you have in Nigeria is...
We'll have to pick that up when we come back in a moment. We're going to cut to commercial. We'll be right back with Ms. Oyolade discussing opportunities in Nigeria.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. This is Nate Sapaya, continuing our interview with Ms. Oyolade discussing opportunities in Nigeria. Now, we just discussed the privatization of industries in Nigeria causing increased trade, the consumer opportunities. And, one of the main things when investing in emerging markets is the trifecta of labor, land, and capital. And in emerging markets, we're mostly missing the capital part, whereas most labor and land are coming from emerging markets. So, Ms. Oyolade, what is the availability of capital in Nigeria? Are we requiring a lot of foreign direct investment? Is there capital available to increase business? What is the availability of capital in Nigeria today?
Well, when you talk about capital, I assume you're talking about accessibility to business loans and
exactly.
Business loans. Okay. The availability of capital, the liquidity itself in the system is actually very low. It's very, they would say in my industry, it's a precarious situation, and that is accounted for by the fact that, you know, the short-term view of the market that most operators take. If you don't have, policy-backed initiatives where the government itself drives the system, the financial sector, to have bankable loans, and have policies that actually generate long-term deposits. And, here we have certificates of investment and things like that that would actually stay in the bank, and people will become, they actually encouraged to invest for the long term. Once that is missing from policy, then you have the kind of gaps in funding activities that we see today in the Nigerian funding sector. It's common to actually see deposits of short tenors of 90 days to 1 year. I think treasury bills itself, when you look at the government side of things, with which government funds its deficits, treasury bills would have a life of about 2 years maximum. However, now we do have also, as an initiative of the government, what you call the federal government bonds. And so we have 10-year bonds trading by the Nigerian Central Bank. However, people are not well-versed. They do not understand the benefits of actually investing in a 10-year bond. Why? Because obviously the short-term view of a market actually takes preeminence, where you are thinking of what you need to buy immediately, because sure. It's actually a cash-based economy. You do not have, the credit system. There's no real credit system where you have credit cards issued like you do in North America. You can have credit cards and you can go into a mall and shop with your credit cards. However, you have debit cards. And so that's the way the financial system works, where you have debit cards, meaning that you already preloaded your debit card and it's directly attached to your savings account. And so there are no credits in the system. And so accessibility of funding is very, it's very low. It's scarce to access funding from banks because obviously the requirements that you need to meet to even access funding as a small business is also very steep. And so you find smaller businesses accessing funding from either the government window through some private agencies of the government that have been instituted. So you have some of the institutions like the mortgage savings and loans institutions, and of course the rates at which such funding is accessed is also very high. And so if you have an average rate of about 18% to 19%, you're wondering what kind of business you would need to do for you to actually execute the business successfully and then put some return on the table after repaying the loan. And so these are the major gaps that you have in the financial sector. The funding is very low, it's not available, and then even when it is available, it's at such cutthroat rates that most people will think twice before looking at the window of opportunities before accessing them. And so this is where the banks are very vibrant. They're very vibrant banks. They have all kinds of options, but they are all short-term. I will be surprised to see a bank in Nigeria, for instance, lend funds at tenors duration outside of a straight 1.5 years, 2 years. Wow. That's actually the current status. Of course, the loans will be available for 2 years. It could be available for 2 years, but that has to be the minimum. That has to be the maximum tenor. However, they are subject to a renewal. But you know how you do business. You want some stability, and you want to be sure that the funding is available for you to actually take the kind of steps that you need to. But once the assurance is not provided, and you know that you've signed a term of 2 years, then it poses a major risk to how you repay and to the kind of business that you can do. What are the options? That's why people begin to look out, and that's why funds like ours also came into the market to look at opportunities to fund 5-year term, 5-year transactions, and to look at what sectors those monies have to be put into, because the sectors also matter. While the government itself, when you look at the government, has tried, to encourage, the calls from sectors, the real sector of the economy,
And so you have the agricultural sector, you have the manufacturing sector, you know, those sectors that are already deficient. If it's an import-based economy, then obviously you need to encourage a lot of manufacturing to take place. You need to industrialize the place. You need agricultural products to be sold because you have the land for it and you have the labor for it. It's just the capital that is missing. And so the government itself, through some special windows, have instituted some agencies and put some structures in place where people can access funding from these windows. However, you know, it's one thing to actually put some structures in place. It's another thing to be able to access the funding from those windows. And when it's difficult and the requirements are so many and people are not even able to meet the requirements, then people throw their arms up in the air and they're just not sure what to do. And right. That's where other private equity funds come into play, where they can actually create a secondary market where people can access some different types of funding for longer tenors or some partnerships where you can get investors to partner with you to execute the projects that you have on hand to do.
Okay. We've discussed the availability of capital funding and the sectors, the growth of the economy, but with so many opportunities, you know, there's the potential in the consumer sector, the hospitality sector, infrastructure, energy, manufacturing, so on and so forth. You know, from your point of view in directing investment, where do you start in terms of looking at a potential investment in Nigeria? What sector or opportunity stands out to you as the kind of first couple you would look at just due to the fact that there's so many opportunities?
Well, for us as IMCAP, what we did was to conduct a thorough market research. Okay. We identified two key areas in the economy, and for us it's the real estate and hospitality sectors and food. You know, so if you say real estate, hospitality, tourism will be grouped under real estate generally.
Okay.
And then you look at the food, you know, food and beverages. For us,
how did you arrive at those two over, say, telecom or manufacturing, or how did those two, through your market research process, come to the top?
One, it's a function of where we have our strengths. Our competences in the last 30 years of our operations, we've actually done a lot of transactions in the real estate sector. We've delivered over 30 commercial real estate sector projects and to the private and the public sector. And we find that, I mean, if a country has a housing deficit, in Africa alone it's put at about 110%, about 70% deficit in housing, and meaning that 110 million housing units will be required, you know, per annum, because it means that a lot of people are living in shanty slums and, you know, so housing, there's a dire need for housing to be provided for the people. And we're talking low-cost housing, we're talking medium-cost housing, and then we're talking, you know, the big ones too. So this presents a huge opportunity when people can build 1,000 units, another 5,000 units, low-cost housing, priced at not specific market rate, maybe a little lower than what is obtainable in the market. And then priced also to suit the needs of the people and the income-generating abilities of the people. That way, then you position yourself not to fail because you know that the people can afford the kind of products that you're throwing out in the market.
Right.
And so for us, that's how we came about that, looking at the housing deficit in the market, in the economy. And
okay.
Then for the food, I mean, wherever you have food, you'll always fail. And like I mentioned to you, if up till now, as we speak, only KFC and possibly Domino, maybe one or two outlets of Domino is what I see in the whole country with 174 million people, then that tells you that there are huge potentials in the food business, right? It means that if you are able to bring in some chains and franchises in that regard, then you can actually feed the people and people in the emerging middle class that we talked about earlier and the real middle class that I talked about earlier, 38% of them, they come out here because they can afford to. When we talk about the middle class and the emerging middle class, they are people on an average salary of about $10,000. What it means is that they can actually afford to travel. They travel, then they see this kind of, they see the brand names and the eateries, then they know that they want a sizable meal a day and they want the meal quality meals too. And so once you're able to put that, make that, you know, provide that, they will actually patronize your stores. And so having done that and having realized that, knowing the kind of number of people that will be able to, that you can actually target to patronize you, we zeroed in on those two sectors. However, this, you know, this is based on our own internal research. There are other potentials, I mean, huge opportunities in other sectors of telecoms, electricity, you know, energy, and internet. That's data services. When you talk about the internet, now we're talking about data services, because the rate of dropped calls, you know, yes, I talked about licenses being issued to about four different companies at the onset of about 2003. And so obviously, those four companies have actually taken, I mean, you would say they've actually supplied as many issued out lines, as many as possible. However, there are huge gaps also in the services provided, where they charge per month. I mean, it's easy to see mobile telephony costs at about $12 per month in Nigeria, $12 per month, where when you compare that to $8 in other developed nations, like in North America, or for you to see power costs at about 5 cents, about 14 cents per month. I mean, per kilowatt hour, about that, when it's about 14 cents in the United States or Europe. So, you know, these are huge opportunities if somebody, you know, some investors come in also, and the power sector is approached cautiously and then reviewed, and as independent power providers, they are able to actually invest in as independent power providers. Independent power providers are the smaller end of, you know, they invest in the services, and they are the logistic providers, and they issue out meters, and they have the prepaid kind of cabling and payment settlement structures. And so they work with the holding companies instituted by the government. And then in the privatization, that the reforms that are taking place, now some companies have been issued licenses to actually have their own hub, where they actually generate electricity from. So they sell that.
We have to go to our last commercial break, and we'll be right back with Ms. Oyelade to discuss the practicalities of investing in Nigeria.
Okay.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our last segment. It's been my great pleasure to be speaking with Olutoyin Oyelade, Managing Director of INCAP, discussing Nigerian investment. Olu, you were just finishing up discussing the opportunities and sectors within Nigeria. You, through your own market research, you found real estate and food to be the top you liked, but you were also talking about power generation. And we should finish up where we left off before the commercial break.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nate. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I was saying that Nigeria's low facility density itself, you know, represents an opportunity for discerning investors. Where you have the kind of charges that we currently get in Nigeria, then you know that you can actually strategize on partnering either with the local, you know, people on ground locally, or bringing in investors to actually invest in the telecom sector, the power sector, or the internet and data services sector. Currently, I was talking, before we left off, I was actually talking about the newly licensed mobile telecommunication services operators and how people actually need to carry or hold two telephones, two cell phones, one because the services may have been cut off from one today, but then the other one will be up and running. And so because you really don't want to be cut off from your business contact, already have two of your telephone numbers. And so one can call on they can always call on your alternative number if one is down. However, because you already paid for a whole month, maybe possibly a $12 or $14 rate per month, then you know that the money is already gone, right? However, you don't want to lose a business opportunity, so you give out that number. And so that in itself, that deficiency in the telecommunication sector also poses an opportunity for discerning investors to look at how they can provide services that are more stable, and then they can also charge for and get the absolute, the return on the investment. On data services, the same thing happens where the internet services is down, and so you're not able to reach out to your business contact, and then you've got to find alternative means of reaching out to them. And so it's very common to find people writing, oh, the email service was down today, or it was down yesterday, except for the huge multinationals and people in the banking industry, the companies in the banking industry that can now actually afford to hoist a mast, and have more superior and more sophisticated telecom services. So these are opportunities in the sector. I wanted to cite the example of Airtel, which is actually from the Middle East. We took a bet on the mobile telephony market and MTN. These guys took a bet in about 2002 when the license was issued out. And today, MTN has actually risen, which is a South African country. It was number 8 in South Africa when it came into Nigeria in 2000 to obtain the license. Today, it's number 1. Within the region. And that's because it's dealing in a country that has a population of 174 million people.
Of course.
Nando's also is one of the food chains in South Africa, came into Nigeria. You have Nando's, you have the Radisson Group. They are all in Nigeria now, and they're partaking of all the various sectors that I've earlier mentioned. And it's time, I think, for investors to take another look at the various sectors that we have discussed today.
Okay. When I spoke with Mark Mobius a few years ago, and obviously his very simple and number one rule about looking at frontier and emerging markets is, can you get your money out? So in terms of kind of rule of law in Nigeria, how is the kind of investment or financial infrastructure set up in terms of banking, repatriation of capital if you do invest there? What is the on-the-ground risk for investor in terms of getting their money out of a Nigerian investment?
Well, getting their money out of the Nigerian, the rule itself, you have the Securities and Exchange Commission. It's that's actually the regulatory authority, and it has a regulatory framework that is very clear. If you visit their website, any investor looking to invest in Nigeria will first need to visit that website and read all the requirements to invest in Nigeria, all the regulatory requirements, the kind of registrations that need to be done and concluded before taking the decision to invest. The other one, which is because that's very clear and it's clearly articulated on that website, so you can take them one by one and dot your I's and cross your T's before you take the bold step. The other alternative that the well-established private equity funds also do is to partner with local funds already on ground, and so they would partner with sort of domestic, the local focused private equities, and look to partnering with them if they've done all their due diligences and they see them as a partner of choice.
And then they take a bold step to make investments that way. So some, they found that very rewarding because having a local partner who understands the clear terrain, the regulatory framework, the risks inherent, you know, because there's one thing for you to hear and to do your research and to have all the paperwork. But it's another thing to actually deal with a client face-to-face, to know exactly what the intricacies of dealing with a particular sector are, to know who the major players in that sector are, who they are, what they've done before, what the experiences are, what history they've garnered over time. It's another thing entirely. And the local player might be able to supply that information because just looking at the financial accounts alone and doing a cursory look of that or review might not be enough or adequate. So that's another way to do it. The regulatory landscape itself, it's evolving. It's easy. Well, I mean, we have the Dutch auction system in Nigeria. That's how, you know, once you bring in the money, your capital, it is actually invested depending on the structures that you want, using the SEC or using the local partner that you have on ground. And the Central Bank of Nigeria itself, which is a main risk supervisory agency, will issue what you call a certificate of capital importation to show that you have actually imported funds into the country, depending on the banks that you use. So that's another way. And once that is registered, there's a record that you've actually brought funds into the country. And so when you need to bid at the Dutch auction system, which is how you get your funds out through the foreign exchange system, it's a daily bid. You bid through a bank. And, of course, investors directly wouldn't need to go through that themselves if they have a local partner on ground who will be doing that for them. You know, so you bid through that. And so because that window is open on a daily basis, it's easy to get your money out of the system. And that's talking about repatriating capital and getting capital out. However, in terms of investing directly in projects, another way, the major way of getting your capital out of the projects to which you have invested them is actually by direct sale, or depending on the sector. In the real estate sector, it's common to see off-plan sales where as you're building, then you're selling. If you have 50% already, you already sold 50%. And then, of course, you already set aside the capital that was invested, at least a large portion of it, ready to be repatriated to your investors over a particular, a good number of years. And so these are various options. IPOs are very common with banks because they're actually well-structured. The banking system is very well-structured. So IPOs are very common with banks, but, of course, you need to understand the sector into which you are going because an IPO can be very, it can be done in the manufacturing sector. It depends on the products that you're selling to the market, who your suppliers are, and your logistic providers. But it just depends on the particular sector. And then because you also have foreign subsidiaries. Foreign subsidiaries of, you have Citibank, you have Standard Chartered, you have Standard Bank of South Africa, and you have representative offices of Deutsche Bank and Barclays, all in Nigeria. So it's easier to interact with the banking industry and the banking sector to do third-party transactions through them as an investor.
Okay.
I think those would be points worthy of note for an investor coming in. In terms of duration, a lot of investors actually look at 5 years average. But, of course, as you might know, DFI, the Development of Financial Institutions, would ordinarily look at, they look at longer tenors. They look at 10, 12, 20 years and go. But people usually advise average of 5 years.
Well, we've come to the end of our show. We've run out of time. Ms. Oyelade, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an extremely informative show regarding opportunities in Nigeria. If you'd like to find more information about Ms. Oyelade's firm or Investment Nigeria, you can find her and her firm's profile on the EMEA website, emia.org. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at nate@emia.org, and I will make sure to forward any questions directly to Ms. Oyelade. Again, Olu, thank you so much for your time. This has been an extremely informative interview, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.